Good evening, Wednesday night Bible class attendees. My name is Michael Whittington. Most of you know who I am. I'm the preacher for the Antioch Church of Christ, and we're continuing this Wednesday night Bible online series. A couple of weeks ago, we began with Matthew 6, talked about that for 2 weeks. And for those of you who heard my sermon last Sunday, you'll note that in the sermon, I went from Matthew 23 to Micah chapter 6. And so in the course of this Bible class, I think that's what the panel and I will be talking about, although I will begin with Matthew 6 as a reminder. Let me introduce everyone. I'm quite positive that nearly everyone who's viewing this knows the panel, but there may be some. I know a handful of folks who have called me up and either introduce themselves as strangers or even just some of my friends from other states who didn't know the panel. So we have Andrew Salwards with us. Andrew is our executive minister for the church there. We have Ken Harmon. He's also, he's one of our Bible class teachers, but also has been a gospel preacher in the past. We have Cheryl Friend. Cheryl is the church receptionist and a great thinker and a Bible class leader with the women's groups, and certainly has attended Bible classes for, I don't know how many years, Cheryl, you've been here, but how many have you been here, by the way?
About 40.
Well, yeah, 40. I'm only 35, so for at least five of those years, I wasn't around. Anyway, and we have Sue Albin, who attends both of the Bible classes I teach when we're back at the church building. And I've so appreciated Sue's intellect, her thought. She's a very good thinker. So Sue, welcome. Welcome, sister. So anyway, I've kind of handpicked this group, knowing that they can participate, and they have for the last couple of weeks. So without any further delay, we'll begin. As a reminder, let me just go back to Matthew chapter 6. We've been doing that for a couple of weeks. We're not going to go through the whole thing now, but I do think our brother Ken has a couple of comments. But you'll remember that in Matthew 6, Jesus, in the Sermon on the Mount, which began his ministry pretty much, his three-year ministry, he said in verse 1 to the Pharisees, he's talking about it, and he says, listen, beware of practicing your piety before men just to be seen by them. And then he adds, for verily they have their own reward. And I think what he meant by that is their reward is as superficial as the act of worship is. And then he gave three examples. He said, when you give alms, don't blow a trumpet. Don't bring attention to yourselves. When you pray, again, don't bring attention to yourself. And when you fast, likewise, don't walk around with this disfigured face that everybody might see you're fasting. He wasn't condemning, of course, giving or praying or fasting. He was simply saying, when you pray and when you give and when you fast, do it all for the right reason. Now, Ken, just a moment ago, off the air, you were talking about the word forgiveness. So why don't you pick up with the Lord's Prayer for just a moment, add what you will to it, and then without any hurry at all, then we'll press forward.
Okay. I was telling you, I look back over the last 2 weeks of lessons that we had studied together. And one thing that stood out to me was that we didn't mention that Jesus, when he gives the model prayer, he mentions four basic elements that we need to have in the prayer, and most of them are just said at face value. He could have elaborated on any of them, which we did when we were talking about it, but the only one that Jesus did elaborate on was forgiveness.
That's true.
And he, at the end of the prayer, he says, for if you forgive those that have sinned against you, your Father will also forgive you. If you don't forgive others, your Father will not forgive you either. And I think it kind of ties in with Matthew 5 when he was talking about hate. And he was saying, he gave an example that if you go to the altar to offer a gift and you remember that there's a brother who has something against you, that you need to set your altar down and your gift down at the altar and go to that brother and make that right with him first, then come and offer your gift. I think that an important thing that Jesus is telling us is we cannot pray to him and harbor hate or anger or malice toward another human being. You can't offer an acceptable prayer to God if there's hate and malice in your heart. And I think that's an important part of how we pray. We need to understand that. You've got to make things right with other people before you can be right with God.
That's a great point. Great point. And you're right. Of the three things that he talks about, give us this day our daily bread, forgive us, and deliver us, you know, from the evil one. He does elaborate in verses 13 and 14 with forgiveness. So Ken, you're right on. And I think it's important. It's in fact, you know, I don't know how you guys open your prayers, your daily prayers, not just a javelin, what I call a javelin type, you know, prayer, but for your lengthier prayers, I tend to start with, forgive me. I mean, that's sort of how I began, recognizing God, you know. In fact, I do follow the model for the most part, you know, God is holy and so forth. And then I say, forgive me. I feel like I need to kind of get that out of the way immediately. So the rest of it's kind of heard, you know, that's my own thought. And Ken, that's a very good point. So thank you, brother.
Asking forgiveness. I've always been impressed by David in Psalms. And one of the Psalms, he says, forgive me of secret sins. That is, if I've done something that I'm not even aware of that was wrong, please forgive me of that as well. So I think we need to constantly have that in our minds, that there are so many sins that we can commit, and some without even realizing or meaning to. And David wanted to be right with God, so he even said, forgive me of anything that I did unintended.
Do you remember, is somebody, okay, do you guys remember years ago, at least from our fellowship, where, in fact, Henry Lynn brought up, I think, last week, that we do tend to, you know, sometimes pray using the same familiar words, like guide, guard, and direct, which I think is perfectly fine, especially for those who are a little bit nervous as they publicly pray. But I do the same thing. But you remember the you know, asking God to forgive us of our sins of commission and our sins of omission, which is sort of, I think, Ken, these are my thoughts, what I thought of when you mentioned the secret sins. And I know commission and omission may not be secret because we still may know it, but it's sins that we've committed and things that we should have done that we did not do. So we've omitted things that we should do, we've committed things that we should not have done, etc. So anyway, just great thoughts. As a reminder, the whole theme of Matthew 6 is one of purity, of heart. Let there be no pretense, no hypocrisy, none of that. And then I tied in, which we didn't get to, but I talked about then Matthew chapter 23. So what I'd like to do is go to Matthew 23, but not read all of the woes. I would like to refer to the very same verse 23, that I preached on last Sunday. And we can discuss that. I'm going to give it over here to Cheryl in just a moment, because Cheryl's the one, I believe it was Cheryl, who a week or two ago brought up Micah 6:8 as it referred also somewhat parallel to Matthew 23 of justice, mercy, and faith. In fact, Cheryl, it was so it was a wonderful moment for me, obviously, because as soon as you brought it up, I began really thinking about it, and that's what I ended up preaching on Sunday, Micah 6:8. So thank you for that, although there may be 500 or 600 others who had wished you hadn't have done that.
Oh, no. Oh, that was a great sermon. I've heard good response from it as well.
Well, good. Don't tell anyone.
It was good. It was good.
But, and I agree with you, Ken. Not that you have a good radio face, but I've told Andrew, who's the wizard behind, you know, the wizard behind the curtain, because, you know, throw it back, and Andrew's doing everything. And I've told Andrew many times, I have a good radio face. You know, I wish you could just do an audio tape and not necessarily video. But anyway, okay, Matthew 23. Matthew 23 is the chapter, what I call, of the seven woes. Now, there are actually, in some English translations, you'll see eight woes. But you'll notice in Matthew 23 and verse 14 that some of the ancient manuscripts, in fact, the major ancient manuscripts, seem to omit verse 14. If you included it, it would have been eight times that Jesus, addressing the Pharisees, said, "Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, you're hypocrites." And then he explained why he thought they were hypocritical. They all were on different topics, but the same theme. The same theme was, stop being hypocritical. And the one verse that I referred to last Sunday that I'd like to talk about with you in the panel, and I'm going to have Cheryl in just a moment open that up, is verse 23, where Jesus says, "Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you tithe," I'll just paraphrase, you tithe your garden herbs, you know, mint, anise, cumin, but you neglect justice, faith, and mercy, or justice, mercy, and faith in that order. And then he says, "You blind guides, you strain at a gnat, swallow a camel." I explained during the sermon that they would process their wine in outdoor vats, and they were very careful to make sure that all the bugs were not there. So Jesus used that real moment, and then he just he gave it a very humorous touch. It's sort of parabolic, where he used something that they were already familiar with. And then he attached the spiritual meaning to it. They were familiar with being very careful not to have their bugs be processed with the wine. Not only was it not kosher, and they were unclean, but just the thought of it. And then he said, you know, that's what you do when you tithe your garden herbs. You strain out gnats, so when you swallow your wine, you don't have any gnat, you don't have any bug, but you've missed the camel. And the camel's the justice, mercy, and faith, and so you swallow a camel. It's a very meaningful exchange, I think. And I believe if there are eight woes, it would be number five. If there are seven, leaving out verse 14, then it would be number four. So Cheryl, why don't you kind of kick this off, and sure, Let's just everybody jump in and let's talk about this. Go ahead, sister.
Well, the first thing that jumped out at me is the parallel between that passage and Micah 6:8, which I printed several versions for me to refer to, but the one I like the best is, "He has told you, O man, what is good. What does the Lord require of you but to do justice, to love kindness, and to walk humbly with your God." So he basically sums it up as if he needed to. Back in Matthew 22, when he gives the greatest commandment. You know, what's the greatest commandment? To love God, and the second is to love others. So really the two kind of go hand in hand. He's already told them what the most important thing is. Now he's referring to an Old Testament passage in this passage. So he's trying to get them to see what's really important. And like them, sometimes we don't get it. I don't think they got it. And sometimes we don't.
Well, why? I mean, it's really straightforward. Why do you think
it is?
I get it. And we, I guess you're talking about the Christian church. I mean,
I am. People in general. I think it's because of the way we tend to look at ourselves before we look at others. A lot of times we tend to be self-focused, self-absorbed, instead of seeing what God sees. We see what's important to us. And I think there's a difference there.
I think sometimes we, we kind of get in our echo chamber a little bit. And I think maybe that's what was going on with the Pharisees here. They'd kind of been in an echo chamber, I think, probably when they started, when they started to try to follow God and follow his commands and his rules, it was probably out of pure motive. But over time it turned into a kind of look at me type thing. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why Micah says, do justice or do, you know, do act justly, not just talk about being just. Don't just, you know, among yourselves talk about how great we are, to actually take that and put it into action. And I do think sometimes we as a church, it's easy for us to refer to our individual responsibilities and following Christ as a church mandate and not an individual mandate. And so sometimes we kind of hide behind the group a little bit. And so as we talk about reaching out to others, and yes, we can come and we can give our tithe, but if we walk out the doors and we neglect to do justly and have mercy and be faithful in our individual walks, then all we've done is pay lip service to a culture. So,
and I think sometimes all of us have a desire to be liked and be respected by others. And I think this kind of grows out of that. I believe that the Pharisees, they were placed in the position of leadership of the people, and they wanted the people to respect them, to follow them, but in doing so, they put more emphasis on the method than they did on the motive, and they lost themselves along the way in trying to act righteous so the people would respect them, and they forgot to be righteous.
What are your thoughts, Sue?
I'm sitting here. Nothing is coming just wham to me, but I just
have to.
I
have to do that, let me know.
Well, it's very unusual for me, too, right, Whit?
Yeah, it actually is.
But anyway, it's just something that I kind of have to make sure I deal with. I try to make sure I'm not a hypocrite. I'm not the one standing there praying, you know, on the corner, which I probably wouldn't do anyway. But this all just spells out what we're supposed to be doing in our life: to act justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God, to try to stay in step with Him.
You know, I mentioned during the sermon last Sunday, which I'd like to kind of touch base now with you. Andrew, you were talking about action, and I, you know, you've all alluded to it, but I think, Andrew, you really kind of mentioned those are all active verbs. And, you know, I think you said something about, well, it's not just, these are my words, but, you know, not just thinking that one ought to be just, but actually, you know, being just, acting just. It reminds me of the text in James where James talks about feeding the hungry. And you can say, you know, go in peace and be fed. But if you don't feed the person, then that's certainly not pure religion. Where's that text found, guys? I'm not even sure where it is. I know it's in James chapter 2, I think. Maybe one of you can look it up and bring it up later. But yeah, so you've got act and love, of course, is an active verb, and a walk. Interesting that Micah said, and by the way, you know, you've got in Micah, you've got this great lawsuit, chapter 6 and 7, where God being the plaintiff and Israel defending themselves. And it's pretty well summed up, I think, in that one verse that Cheryl brought up a couple of weeks ago. So we all God requires of us. And I think that's very interesting when Micah records, and what does the Lord require but those three things? And I don't know if there's a fourth. I mean, I guess you could pretty much group your entire Christian godly life around acting justly, showing mercy, loving mercy, and walking with God. But they're active verbs. So I just thought I'd echo what Andrew was talking about in the action part of it.
One thing that I thought of when Sue was struggling to put into words what she was thinking. What she really wanted to say was there's a correlation between between those three verses and the fruits of the Spirit. When I see Sue, I see so many of those fruits of the Spirit, and a lot of those stem from those three things: loving mercy, being merciful, and walking humbly, and loving justice. So many of the fruits of the Spirit are a direct result of that.
Well, that's what I was thinking. You know, Galatians, and I wasn't.
Well, Sue and I were.
That's a great. Go ahead, Sue.
A few weeks ago, I used standing in the foyer as an example of hypocrisy. And a dear friend of mine kind of asked me where I was going with that. And I sure did not want to make the impression that I thought that was being hypocritical, because I sure don't. I think that seeing people pray anywhere in restaurants, even standing on the street corner, wherever, you know, is a good thing. Because, and it came to my mind that in Luke 9, I had to look it up, but in Luke 9, 49 through 50, John asked Jesus about driving out, that they had met somebody that was driving out demons in his name. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Jesus answered to that, basically, don't worry. If he's not against us, he's for us. So I kind of follow that, and I hope this is not offensive to anyone. But if I see somebody praying, and even if they are praying to, you know, get the attention on them, who am I to judge? Somebody may see them and think, oh, wow, I need to do that more. I need to pray more. I don't know how to like they do, but I can at least start.
Good point. You know, most things can be abused or can be used for God. Has everyone heard my four-year story? May I share that, Andrew? Is that okay? Okay. Back a long time ago, we've been at Antioch since 1979. Maynard and I came as newlyweds. And back in those days, I was shy. I really was. I promise. I really was. But to get over, I became convinced that I needed to speak more, and that I needed to, that God could use my willingness to talk. So I mapped out a square in the foyer. We had blocks back then on the tile. So I told God I would stand in that foyer, in that square in the foyer, and anyone he sent to me, I would talk to. It only took 3 weeks of doing that before I was pretty much talking to anybody who would listen. But I was able to use that as an opportunity to do good. So people saw me, but they knew I was willing to talk to them. So that was good.
As I look, just looking at some of this James passage, I know you alluded to James, Whit.
So where is, what are the verses?
Well, it chapter 2 is kind of this, well, honestly, the whole book of James, James is he's a doer. You know, he's all about faith and action. You know, faith without action is dead. You know, we have to be active, even to the point in chapter 5 when he talks about, you know, confessing your sins one to another so that you may be healed. I feel like even that is it's an action. You know, I imagine I'm taking some liberty here, but I imagine when the Pharisees got together, they didn't stand around and talk about all the bad things that they've done and share that with one another, because that would not have been kind of in line with their piety. But when I read at the end of James chapter 2, verse 12, it says, speak and act as those who are going to be judged. I mean, if we are to speak and act as those who are going to be judged, then naturally we're going to have to be humble. So he's calling for humility, because judgment without mercy will be shown to anyone who has not been merciful. Mercy triumphs over judgment. And again, I almost feel like James probably was highly tied into maybe the writings of Micah. I don't know if he had access to those at that point or not, but obviously there's a lot of correlation between faith and what we do. And not that we, you know, I always tell the teens that, you know, I would always tell them that we don't want to put the cart before the horse. We do the things we do because of the faith that we have. It's an overflow of faith. We don't do the things we do so that people can see us or look at us and say, hey, that's someone with faith. And so that kind of gets back to really the heart of what's going on. And that's what, you know, as Jesus is moving through the Sermon on the Mount, I mean, it's all about pushing back against the heart and not the outward appearance. You know, we don't want to be whitewashed tombs, basically. And so looking at just the way that we allow faith or our belief or relationship with God to affect our outward actions, and not trying to put out outward actions that somehow say that we have faith. And I know that's a difficult thing to balance, but I do think that's what Jesus came to challenge us with throughout the Gospels, for sure. And James kind of helps us. James probably like me a little bit. I'm an action. I like to do things kind of guy. So I've always liked James, but there is something about our heart needs to be the fuel behind our actions. And not just we don't fill up our tank by the actions we do. Our tank should already be full. And then coming out of that is why we act.
Yeah, those are good thoughts. Of course, it's got to be action. And I do concur that James is, wow, what an active, sort of the New Testament Proverbs, you know, all of his thoughts were really proverbial. Very quickly, let's look at, before we wrap this up in 5 or 10 minutes, let's look at the three things that Jesus says they neglected. And Micah said that the Lord required. I think they are the same. Justice, mercy were specifically the same words. Jesus used the word faith. Justice, mercy, you've neglected justice, mercy, faith. Micah says the Lord requires justice, mercy, walking humbly, which is a matter of faith, I think. And I took the liberty on Sunday, and I'm curious if you concur. You need not, and I know that you all know that. But I think the faith that Jesus is making reference to is not only a belief that God exists, but the action behind the belief, a true saving faith, that if you don't practice justice, if you don't practice mercy, you must not have any faith. That you have to faithfully practice justice and mercy. And that's walking humbly with your God. So I'm just curious, let's, you know, give me your thoughts, definitions, or whatever you think they meant when they used Micah and Jesus, when they used the word justice. And let's stay with justice for just a moment. Any thoughts on the definition of justice when Jesus said, don't neglect justice?
I think of what's fair or right.
Okay. Any other thoughts on what he meant?
I think it includes treating all people fair and right. I think that's mm-hmm. at the heart of the justice is not showing partiality in any way to anyone, but to treat all people the same. And certainly Jesus did that.
That kind of ties in, Ken, with like the parable of the Good Samaritan in Luke 10. We discussed that a few weeks ago as well. So he's addressing the Pharisees. He's telling them that they're religious leaders and they're putting on such a pretense that they even give 10% of something that God didn't require. I know of nowhere where God required the garden herbs. It does talk about the crops and so forth, but from what I've studied, continue to read that the biblical scholars believe that that this was an addition, which makes a great contrast. In other words, he's saying on one far end is giving 10% tithing, something that God doesn't even require, to show people how pious you are, that you're going beyond God's requirements, and yet you miss the whole core. You miss the core of the issue, which is justice, mercy, and faith. So he's telling the Pharisees that they were not acting justly. Is that how you read it as well? And if they were not fair and right with their fellow, it might well have been, Ken, that maybe they felt like they were fair with their neighbor, with the Jewish people, but Jesus took it beyond that.
I think that was exactly it. They felt their only obligation was to their immediate family or their brethren, but not to everybody. They had partiality. They had bias in the way they exhibited their justice.
And back in Matthew 23:4, when he says they make strict rules that are hard for people to obey, they try to force others to obey all their rules, but they themselves will not try to follow any of the rules.
That's a great point. That's how he introduces the whole seven woes.
I think about the sinful woman that anointed Jesus' feet. The Pharisees are standing there saying, well, if you knew who it was that's doing that, you know, they certainly did not treat her as, you know, being fair with her.
I'm looking at a commentary here from Logos, and it says justice means rightness with God. Nothing is just until it is adjusted to God. And so God kind of sets the platform for righteousness. And then this writer refers it back to our criminal law court and says the justice of a law court is superficial because it's an exactitude between man and man. And so it's not necessarily taking back to a relationship with God. And so it's important for us to, you know, to realize that what we're trying to do is we're trying to bring people back to the justice of God, not necessarily the justice of man. The justice of man is important. It creates order in our world, but really we're trying to get them more on a right standing with God and his law. And I think it's interesting, like right after that, when it says love mercy, if you look at, for instance, in John 8, when Jesus, the woman caught in adultery, and I know that's not in some manuscripts, but in John 8, when he's doing this and Jesus kneels down, justice has been executed in a way because she has been brought into this right standing with God. But then his action is that of mercy. It's to say, you know, go away from here and sin no more. You know, don't get caught back up in this. And the teachers or those who had come out to stone her were totally thrown by that because, you know, that's not what they expected to happen. They thought, well, man, we're going to push justice. But what you see and you get, sorry, I'm jumping on tangents all over the place here, but you know, taking the pack the extra mile, you mentioned that with this past Sunday, all those are acts of mercy followed, you know, justice preceded that. Then you have this act of mercy. And what that does is it hits at the heart. I mean, that's what goes after the heart. When you do something that is so far beyond just the justice is there, the penalty's been served, but then all of a sudden, man, we're gonna show mercy, and not just in a little way, but in a big way, we're gonna carry the pack 2 miles. I think that's what Jesus is getting at, and that's what just changes people's hearts, and that's what he wants us to do. He wants us to help point them toward this just playing field with God. Hey, this is what God thinks. This is what he requires. You know, look at your life, look how that's affecting you, but then move more toward him because of the mercy he's showing you through his son ultimately. But anyway, sorry.
No, perfect.
That's so good.
Got on a big rabbit there.
Yeah. Great thoughts. So what about walking humbly then? Let's kind of wrap it up here. Ken, I just saw, were you getting ready to say something just then? Did I interrupt you?
I was thinking that in our court system, we, the symbol for justice in our court system is the blindfolded woman holding the scale. And that's justice is blind, but it's also fair. And I just think that that really is the best way to describe it.
In fact, when
I think about walking humbly, can't help but think about serving.
Yeah.
The servant is humble, is going to walk humbly and serve others, not just walk along and take care of themselves. They're going to be serving.
I mentioned Sunday about the applause, seeking the applause only of heaven. And then I added, maybe even not the applause of heaven. I thought about the book that Lucado wrote years and years ago, The Applause, I think it's called The Applause of Heaven. I like the title. And of course, it was a very good book, great, great devotional book. For me, that's my litmus. That's what I remind myself of very often. You know, am I doing this to seek somebody's applause? Which it really isn't necessarily bad. I mean, I want, for example, my wife, I want Debbie. I do things just because I want her not to applaud me, but because I know that she wants me to do it. You know, she wants it done. So I'm not saying that it's awful for us to seek applause, but if our acts of worship, if our justice and mercy and walking humbly, if being the church receptionist or being the youth minister or whatever other title you may have, or being a Bible class teacher or whatever we do, just make sure that we're wanting, you know, to ask God. And that's really challenging. I know I can go to each one of you. I know. Because every sermon, every class, no matter what I do, I remind myself that, you know, it doesn't have to be, you know, it doesn't have to be great as long as you've done your best. I mean, it's nice to have people say, well, you know, that helped. Thank you. I mean, we all need encouragement, but it's the words of God. It's, you know, well done, good and faithful servant. You know, you've been faithful over little, I'll make you ruler over much. That kind of wouldn't that be wonderful to hear? And I believe we'll all hear it. I mean, I certainly pray I do. I think you guys will. You know, well done, my good and faithful servants.
With anyone who's gone through the third and fourth grade girls' devotional, we talk when we do those about making Jesus smile.
I like that.
Yep.
I like that. Well, listen, thank you very much for the panel and for those of you who are viewing this. Next Wednesday, we're going to pick up again with Matthew 23 and the seven woes, but we're going to make kind of a comparison to Matthew chapter 5 in the Beatitudes. And I've asked our brother Harmon here to kind of facilitate that. So I hope that you'll stay tuned next week. It's the last Wednesday in May. And then we'll find out what our shepherds of the congregation, what they decide to do when it comes to how open we're going to be and, you know, when we'll actually invite everyone back to the building. So keep us in your prayers. You are in our prayers. In fact, I'll close in prayer. Are there any other thoughts prior to this moment of prayer? Anybody? Okay. I want to thank all you guys, Ken and Andrew and Cheryl and Sue. And I want to thank you who are viewing this. Without any further delay, let's ask God to bless this moment and then we'll end. Righteous God, we do say thank you. It's a beautiful day you've given us, and we just say thank you for the blessings all around us, for nature and for our family of God at Antioch. We ask you, Lord, that what we've said in the last 30 or so minutes has been pleasing to you. We truly do only want your applause. We want to, as your people, as your sons and daughters, we want to do whatever you would have us to do. Thank you for your word that guides us. Help us walk more closely with you, because of our study tonight. In the name of Christ, Father, hear our prayer. Amen. God bless you.